spirited songs that we were just led in. Appreciate the good prayer. Exciting time. Looking forward to new appointments with respect to servants of the church. We need to be keeping the Lawrenceville Church here in prayers as that moves forward. Do appreciate the visitors that we have here today. We're going to be looking at a topic of great importance with respect to the issue of origins. The very question of where we have come from is of vital importance because it has strong bearing on another question. The question of where we are ultimately going. Is there a God or is there not a God? If there is a God, we have responsibilities. We're going to have to answer one day for our actions. When I was in high school, over out there in the state of Washington, I did not intend for it to be this way, but it just happened to be this way, that a good number of my friends happened to be dyed-in-the-wool evolutionists. And as I was talking with them, and with one in particular, the statement was made in a very blunt way. Justin, now, if you would just open your eyes and take a few moments here to look at what has been discovered in the world of biology, you simply would not be a Bible believer. Well, I decided to at least take him up on this challenge here, and so in high school, I showed a lot of interest in the biological sciences, and actually, as I went into college, I decided to make as my degree program biochemistry. Now, the official name for that was cellular and molecular biology, but that's always even been a mouthful even for myself. I don't quite like that long phrase, and so this is a biochemistry-type degree. But far from any of this shaking my faith or making it weak or breaking it altogether, no. My faith just became still reinforced. And I know how in the Lord's body, just as we talk as Christians, as we talk amongst ourselves or as we talk to people in the community, we sometimes look at evolution and we describe it like this. We'll say, why, you know, it's just a theory, right? After all, evolution is just a theory. And I get where we're coming from on that. But let me hasten to point this out, just as I started to explore this in great detail. Looking at that word theory. A theory is something that could be true or could not be true. It just simply hasn't really been tested, right? And so we look, for instance, at the topic of, say, gravity. We don't have this practice of talking about the theory of gravity. How do we talk about gravity? We say that there is a law, the law of gravity. What goes up must also come down. All right, that's been seen, that's been observed. We know that to be true. Okay, well, when looking here at this subject of evolution, if in fact you can rule out that as a possibility for an explanation of what we see here today, it can't even really be a theory. See where I'm coming from? And I'm here to say to you today that I believe it is flat out impossible for evolution to have occurred to be the answer for why it is that we are here today. We're going to look here then this morning at a subject that has to do with evidences. The theory of evolution, so-called, first gained notoriety when Charles Darwin published his book, Origin of the Species, way back in 1859. What you have to realize about this is that Darwin had his biases even before he formed his theory. Were you aware of how he did not accept the biblical doctrine of hell? Now, he was cultured and brought up in a, quote, church environment, and so he'd hear the minister talk there about heaven and hell, but this idea of hell was just absolutely repulsive to him. He just could not accept any such idea as that. He also confessed that he had trouble with the, quote, God of the Old Testament, whom he personally considered to be vengeful, spiteful, and often angry. And in point of fact, too, the development of his theory on evolution happened to coincide with the loss of his precious daughter. A daughter of his died. And some have talked about that. We don't quite know altogether all the connections that can in fact be made. But I cannot help but wonder if being angry at God, and let me point this out, he was so grieved at her death that he did not attend the funeral. But in being angry at God, what better way to try to get at God than by attacking Genesis chapter 1? And lo and behold, when looking here at this subject, this gets to the crux of the matter of the Bible. Very often those who accept evolution do so because they do not want to be accountable for sin. Like I've heard one say in the past as to why he did not read the Bible, why he did not come to church services, is he says, look, I just don't need that guilt. I just don't want that guilt. Well, at least you could give him some points for having the honesty to admit his motivation in that. That's the way a lot of people look at that. Why? You know, I want to live the way I want to live. I want to make the choices that I want to make. And I just don't need any parameters. I don't need to be corralled in. And so we see where a lot of people go with this today. Looking here at creation and putting it side by side against the model of evolution, we see how these two ideas can never, ever be harmonized. There you have with the biblical record in Genesis chapter 1, how the heavens and the earth were made in 6 literal days. 6 literal days. But when talking with those in evolutionist circles, you have a very different picture. Well, they're going to say that about 13.8 billion years ago, that's when you had this big bang. And then you see the earth that we have here today, why it was just molten and it was boiling hot, and all of the while here now it's starting to cool and to coalesce and really come together. And so they say all of that happened about 4.5 billion years ago when this earth formed. Why then 3.6 billion years ago, that's when you would have seen the first cell in some primordial pond. 470 million years ago, there's the emergence of plant life. 250 million years ago, we've got the age of the dinosaurs now coming about. And then watch this here. They're going to tell you that about 250,000 years ago, 250,000 years ago, that's when you had mankind emerging from the jungles. Now, they're going to say that there were some subhuman species prior to this, but about 250,000 years ago, here comes man as a Johnny-come-lately. All right? Well, theistic evolution is the theory or notion that God created the universe but then chose to work through evolution. So in other words, here's this idea that God just tipped over that first domino and then just let the rest happen however it was supposed to happen. Or he wound that clock and then just stepped back. But we have to remember that the Lord Jesus Christ said something very different. There in Matthew chapter 19, verse 4, he answered thusly, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female?" Mankind was created. Man and woman both were created. They did not evolve. And when were they created? They were created there at the beginning. At the beginning. Now watch this very closely. Here you have a biblical picture. A biblical worldview that is clearly portrayed. When you take up the chronologies that are there, the genealogies that are there for the lifespans of different individuals, patriarchs, and moving forward, you can find that this earth is on the order of about 6,000 years. 6,000 years. Give or take, but in that ballpark there. And mankind was created when? At the beginning. At the beginning. But now, the evolutionist has a very different idea here. The evolutionist wants to say that, oh, what we have here with the universe, why, that goes back about 13.8 billion years back. And so you cannot talk about mankind being created there at the beginning. Oh, no way, no, because planet Earth was not even here. And they're going to say that, oh, just here at the tail end of this long stretch of a line here now that might represent universal time, then lo and behold, right there as a little hiccup towards the tail end, That's when you have mankind. And that sums up the entirety of our history, according to the evolutionist. Why is this relevant? Bottom lines. I'm all about bottom lines. If the Bible cannot be trusted about the beginning, pray do tell, how can it be trusted implicitly about the end? If the Bible does not have accurate answers for this life, is it infallible about the afterlife? If the doctrine of the first Adam is regarded as false, can the doctrine about the second Adam, Jesus Christ, be true? Do you not see how so much is at stake in this debate and in this controversy? We're going to be talking here about how evolution is impossible. It's impossible in the first place, just as you consider, number one here, the existence of this universe. Step through this here with me. Bear with me for just a moment now as I give this illustration. Now, let's just picture here a little lad, a little boy here, curious about how life came about. We've all had questions like that in the early going. All right, so here's this child here, and he's talking now with an evolutionist. He's engaged here with this man that seems very professional, very intellectual, very intelligent now. He's got the white coat. He's got the glasses there. He holds a little beaker, as it were, there, a test tube in his hand. So here's the boy wants to know, where did life come from? Well, here's the man with the plan. Here's the man who's got all these answers. You got questions? Why, I've got answers here, he says. You see, it evolved from chemicals in an ancient pond. Well, and the boy is still curious. Where did that pond come from? Oh, you see, I got an answer. It came from elements existing as residue of this Big Bang. Well, where did the Big Bang come from? Oh, you see, that goes back to a speck of matter that was just so infinitesimally small and minuscule. It just exploded. You see, oh, the temperatures were so hot right there that would have been much hotter than the surface of the sun. And all of a sudden, bam, it just exploded. And all that we have today is because of that. But that little child's not done yet. Where did the speck come from? And you know as well as I do, this is about where you get to the point where that's all she wrote. He's got no clue, not the foggiest of how to answer that. You see, because when all is said and done, we understand at a very basic level that something simply does not come from nothing. That's just an impossibility. Now, sometimes we'll hear this question raised. If God created everything, then, who created God? All right, good question. What you have to understand is that by definition, by His very essence, God is supernatural. Meaning that He transcends nature. He goes beyond the natural realm. He is divine. I admit that all that we know in nature, with respect to this physical world, the physical creation, yes, we can talk about a distinct beginning and a distinct end, but God is above all of that. That is not His realm. You can just consider here what the psalmist says there in Psalm 90, verse 2. From everlasting to everlasting, you are who? You are God. Before the mountains or the hills ever form, and even long after they might dissolve into the sea, or this world is just consumed and destroyed, you shall still be. God is eternal. And going right back there to the very initiation, the very start. Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. All right? What does that presuppose? That presupposes that God had already been there. In the beginning of time, as we know time today, God was there to set creation in motion. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 is precise and concise beyond human composition. I want for you to allow this to sink in. It really accounts for everything that evolution cannot explain. You see, everything that can be known or observed by science fits quite snugly and conveniently into about five categories, one of five categories here. You can talk about time, you can talk about force, you can talk about action, You can talk about space, you can talk about matter. Here are some fields of scientific study and exploration. All right, now, weigh this out against Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, there you have time. God, how's that for a force? Created, there's your action. The heavens, space, and the earth, there you have matter. It's all right there, just at our fingertips, as we open up the book known as the Holy Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. Evolution proposes an impossibility, for the origin of the universe cannot be explained apart from a designer. We'll talk more about that. But something simply does not come from nothing. Let's also look here at the complexity of nature, and I hope I'm not getting too technical. I might be reproved for this right now, or faulted for it, but again, this is my background. This is what I spent years looking into. We're going to talk here just momentarily now about the cell. But let me back on up. How do evolutionists tell us that life evolved? The conventional answer for them is that, well, you see, it went from simple to complex. Heard that terminology, right? Well, it started out very simple there. Now it's very intricate today. So you see, it went from simple to complex. I have to tell you something here, if I might. When I was at school at the University of Washington, one of the largest textbooks that I'd ever seen in my life was one that I had for a class, and get this, it was about 1,500 pages. 1,500 pages, and it was for a class in cell biology. And on the cover of this book, there were just two words on the cover. Want to know what they were? The cell. 1,500 plus pages simply dedicated to the cell, which is invisible to our eyes. So now I got to thinking, and maybe now you're connecting the dots here on this as well. I said to myself, and this was such a heavy book, boy, it didn't do any favors for my spine as I was lugging around in the backpack. I got to thinking about this now. Well, if the cell is supposed to be so, quote, simple, why do we have to have so much ink describing it? And I knew all too well that you just get onto the internet and you could find volumes more written there about the cell. They don't quite have it all figured out to date, and there's still much more that they're learning all the time. So you see here, it turns out that the cell only appears simple, yet it is actually infinitely more complex than any computer built and constructed today. So even right here at the level of the cell, something invisible to our eyes, this notion of evolution just falls flat. It's busted to pieces. I've got a simple test here I want to administer now, if I might. Don't get scared or intimidated. This is pretty straightforward. Let's just take a test here. I've got a question. What you see here, did this come about by just dumb luck or mere chance? Or are we talking about something that's designed? Here we've got some mainframe computers. You know as well as I do, a lot of man hours went into the production of these machines as they're going to crunch numbers. Go over to IBM and you're going to see the intelligent people there working with these types of machines. Well, how about over here now? What are we looking at? We're looking at some power plants like nuclear power plants or turbines or oil pumps as well that are going to produce energy. We know that all of this was designed. But how about this over here now? And someone might say, I guess I might answer if I knew exactly what I'm looking at. All right, this is the cell. Here's an introduction to the cell, all right? Now, any fella that looks somewhat professional can come in and say, why, this is pretty simple. And a lot of people wouldn't really know what to say one way or the other. I'd say, well, I don't really know what that is, so if the man tells me that it's simple, then I guess I'll just have to believe that it's simple. But no, it never, ever has been simple here. Let me break this down for you. Were you aware that within that cell, and there's trillions within your body, within that cell, within the nucleus, the very central part of that cell, You have your information storage site. You've got the mainframe computers that are crunching numbers. You have it right there. You've got a power plant. You see, because we're talking about the very basic unit of life. A cell is alive. In order to be alive, it has to harvest energy. You have a power plant there within that cell. There's the packaging and delivery service. The Western Union Board, UPS, FedEx right there. A waste disposal site. And let me tell you right now, this is just scratching the surface. There's far more to it. The cell is infinitely more complex than any machine built today. It's a miniature factory, but this, quote, factory has the potential to divide into the 100 trillion cells that make up your body. Simple question. Do you know of any man-made factory that will do that? Now, we've got some pretty fancy-pants factories out there. Our society is built upon that industrial age and all of these factories, but we can't have factories that do this. We don't know how to go about something like that. All that cell division to make you who you are today. We came from a fertilized egg, didn't we? And just for a moment now, let me focus in on this part right here. Packaging and delivery, all right? The question is, how are proteins sent in and out of a cell? All right, well, proteins, even for the person that happens to be a vegetarian, oh, that's fine. You have proteins that are there in your body. They're necessary for your existence. And so we can talk about hemoglobin there within the bloodstream. We could talk about keratin that's there with your fingernails. Melanin for the skin that gives you the skin color that you've got. Opsin for the eyes so that you can see. These are all vital for our well-being and our existence. All right, but now when you look there at the cell, it looks like some type of a blob. I grant that. But it has some skeletal structure to it. There are networks of tubes that sprawl throughout that cell so that it does not implode and collapse in on itself. Now look, here's what happens now. In order for proteins to be transported, what you have here on those tubes are tree-like molecules. They got two legs, they got two arms. And they're going to grab a package, and inside of that package is an essential protein for your body, for your existence. And let me tell you here, I had a professor step through all of this here. And I'm going to share it with you too. So basically what happens is this. You've got these tree-like molecules there on those tubes. You're going to have a molecule that is chock full of energy. It comes, it collides there with one of the feet, foot, then comes up, and it goes like this. Then another energy molecule comes, it collides as well. The next foot then gets up and goes like this, and so on down the line until it gets to the end of that tube there and transport that protein where it needs to be. Is that simple? I don't think so. And yet it happens within our cells. You have any doubts about this? You can see now some photographs, some imaging that's been done here. Electron technology, yes, but they're able to take some pictures of all of this right here. And so you've got a close-up and an even greater close-up where you can see now these tubes here and the little blips or blobs along the tube. That would be there, the tree molecules moving the goods, moving the packages, the vessels that contain the proteins. All of that really, in fact, happens. Truth can be stranger than fiction sometimes. Now here, let me ask you this. Could proteins be taken to essential destinations if, number one, the tube to walk on was not there? Absolutely not. What about the tree with two arms? What if it was not there? What if it just had one arm? What if it just had one leg? It could not be done. What if the energy molecule to move it along was not present within the cell? It could not happen. What if the protein itself was not placed into that package? You see where we're going with this? We can think of a million and one other questions. It all has to be there at the right time, in the right place for all this to work. If any part is missing, the whole system fails to function. And let me tell you right now, if any piece is missing, we would all die. We would fall over flat on the pews that we're sitting on. You see, we don't, in a conscious way, will all of this to happen. It's automatic. God designed it. And looking there at the human body, all of these different systems within the human body, the muscular system, the skeletal system, the nervous system, the vascular system, the immune system, the respiratory system, the digestive system, the renal system, with kidneys, function and purification. Given enough time, could all of that have just, quote, evolved? Let me ask you, which system can we live without here? Even with that boy in the bubble, born with a defective immune system, it couldn't last all that long. You see how these work together? You see how we need these systems? The psalmist tells us in Psalm 139, verse 14, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. It's a shame that many of the professors in the academic world do not own up to that. How could the eye evolve? It's more sophisticated than any camera we can make today. How could the ear evolve? It's more sophisticated than any sound device today. And when we look at Scripture, the Bible has an answer. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, who is responsible for this? The Lord has made them both. Proverbs 20, verse 12. Psalm 100, verse 3. It is He who made us and not we ourselves. We did not make ourselves. We did not evolve. But God created. Our bodies have interdependent systems. And that's a big fancy word, but that's summing up what we're talking about here. One system cannot survive without the other. Your heart is beating today. That's a good sign that you're alive. A heartbeat can go about 60 beats there per minute. So about once every second. Sometimes a little faster, sometimes a little slower. But do you know how that happens? There is a nerve called the sinoatrial nerve that it fires. It triggers your heart to pump. So picture now this, picture here this fist as a human heart, your heart, all right? So there it is, pumping blood, which gets the vital oxygen to the rest of your body, right? Okay. There is a nerve that's triggering it to pump. Now, all cells are going to die. Nerves are going to die without what? Without oxygen. You go underwater, holding your breath. Brain cells will eventually die because you need to have oxygen, you see? All right? So follow the logic on this now. You need that nerve to be there. It has to have oxygen. The blood is going to carry that oxygen. You see where I'm going with this now? Which came about first? The nerve or the blood in the heart? They both had to be there at the exact same time. And let me tell you, it is impossible for evolution to explain that. They're not even going to try. But oh, they know how to pull the wool over a lot of people's eyes with a dogmatic approach they often take. Let's talk here about the universe. Well, did you know that the sun is shrinking at a rate of about 5 feet per hour? This was confirmed by the Greenwich Observatory out there in England, and a number of astronomers and scientists have some variations on this, but you're looking here at a shrinking sun, and I'm about 5'7", so you could almost picture like here my height, and now that the sun is shrinking at about this type of height here every hour. Well, but don't fret too much or worry so much about that part, you see, because the sun is extremely massive. There's about 1.3 million Earths that can fit inside the globe of the sun. So we don't really have to worry about that part there. But doing the math now, follow this. Just simply go backwards in time. All right? Let's reverse all of this. Let's reverse it. Adding 5 feet per hour. Okay? What's going to happen here? All right? Well, if you go back 11 million years, now they talk about the Earth being 4.5 billion years. If you go back 11 million years, you talk about walking on the sun, the Earth would be consumed. If you go back just say 100,000 years, the sun would still be so large that life simply could not be sustained. You might talk about a hot June or July, why you hadn't seen anything yet. All right? We're in the Goldilocks zone, planet Earth. If we were a little closer there to the sun, what might we be like? You got Venus, which is the sister planet. It's very much the same size as Earth, but it is much like a greenhouse. There are temperatures there on Venus that are hot enough to melt lead. We can't survive there. Well, what if we were a little farther from the sun? Well, that wouldn't help us either, because you just look at the planet Mars. It's cold, it's frigid there. You would freeze to death just as soon as you set foot anywhere near there. And I can't help but wonder if in the wisdom of God, as we look at now how we're here in the 21st century, and there with the 20th century, people were beginning to explore the outer space there and look into all of that there and get good close-up pictures of what these planets look like. The ancients did not have those opportunities. Yes, that's true. They did not have those opportunities. But we do today. What it unmistakably shows is how unique and how special we are. And I cannot but wonder if God wants us to see that so that we can understand that we are His special creation and special to Him in terms of redemption. But going back there to that clock illustration, the evolution of one's time when it suits Him but not when it does not, it's impossible for evolution to explain these things. Somebody says, but you know, monkeys there, they just look so human, right? Don't they? I mean, they seem like they could be related that way. Similarities in structure prove a common designer, not necessarily common ancestry. Have you ever heard about the crow's feet? I'm not talking about the wrinkles that you get there near your eye. But you just look at the feet there for birds, and they've got the little switchblade, as it were, there in the back. Where is that also found? I tell you, it's also found on a T-Rex. Common designer. Someone says, well, what about similarities in genes? You know, I heard that we share about 97% of our genes with chimps. Well, that sure sounds like a whole lot, right? So we must be related. Were you aware of how we share about 95% of our genes with a beagle dog? That's awful cute, but that's not kin to us. The more anatomically similar an organism, the more similar the genes. Is there anything really groundbreaking about that? Earth-shattering? Not at all. But by the way, how much information is packed into that 3% difference between the chimps and mankind? A lot of information. Will a chimp ever read this chart here and assess these arguments, evaluate and appreciate argumentation? No, no. The chimp simply will not do that. And the missing link, lo and behold, is still missing. Darwin, as he wrapped up his book, which was very controversial in its day, but changed much of the world. Thus, from the war of nature, from famine and death, he said, the most exalted object of which we are capable of conceiving, namely the production of the higher animals, follows. There is greatness in this view of life, with its several powers, having been breathed into a few forms or into one, and that while the planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms most beautiful and most wonderful have been and are being evolved. All that sounds quite eloquent. He talks about this as being a great view, having grandeur connected with that. No, not at all. It's a view that would write God out of our hearts and minds. He says this, though, but look, oh, you know, breathe into a few forms or into one. Now, wait a second now. But see, he's touching on his own personal ignorance about the cell. How did it come about? I don't quite know. But maybe, just maybe. Maybe it was designed. But from so simple a beginning, we touched on that. That was only apparent, not actual. Life has never been simple. He's wrong. He's wrong. He also said, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down. And we've talked about that. Just looking at the eye, looking at the ear, looking at the heart. That theory is shattered. A fair result can be obtained only by fully stating and balancing the facts and arguments on both sides of each question. He was saying this because he knew people were not very accepting of his idea back there in the 1800s. But is it not interesting how things have been turned up on their head? Is it not interesting that creation cannot be taught in schools? If you try, guess what? They're going to expel you. You're going to get kicked out. I think about what Paul said there in Romans chapter 1. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. There are those who are trying to cover all of this up. They know full well what the evidence is saying, but they don't want you to really understand that. Because that's going to mean that there is a God. He is alive. In Him we move and live, and in Him we survive. They suppress the truth in unrighteousness because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, but their foolish hearts were darkened, professing to be wise. Oh, we're professors. We're the intelligentsia. They became fools. The psalmist said it best. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And in Romans chapter 2, verse 5, Paul would pen, but in accordance or in keeping with your hardness and your impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourself wrath in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God. For those who are trying to shield people from these facts, because they know the implications, they're going to have to answer for that. The blind lead the blind, both fall into the ditch. Let's not be a stumbling block. Offenses must come, but woe to the man by whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were cast into the depths of the sea. Let's make sure that we know the truth and that we also teach people the truth so that their eyes can be opened up, their understanding can be enlightened, that they can come to know the God of heaven who sent His only begotten Son to die for you and for me. And through Him, we can have life in His name as we obey the gospel. Jesus paid that price for you and for me. Jesus is alive and well. And as Jesus talked about the beginning, He also talked about the end. He shall come back one day, and this world shall be destroyed. If we're found faithful in God's sight, we can enjoy a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Let's be there in that number. Become a Christian today. If we can help toward that end, come to the front where we stand now and sing.